Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record program number 395, titled Tangled Webs, Parapolitics, Deep Politics, and Proxy War in the Middle East. This is being recorded on January 19th of 2003, and I will be making references to other broadcasts, and many of the things that I talk about will be referential to other subjects. Sister station WFMU has made the For the Record series available on Real Audio online. Newer programs are streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, one word, DAVEEMORY, and older For the Record programs are available for download only on Real Audio at a longer URL linked to the WFMU.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Real Audio-equipped Spitfire website at spitfirelist.com. Within a week or so of the recording of this program, there will be a detailed, annotated, article-length description of For the Record 395 in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website. Now, in connection with my concept of proxy war, or the concept of proxy war in the Middle East that I've been advancing, where various Islamo-fascist and secular Arabo-fascist regimes and interests in the Middle East have been utilized by the Underground Reich as proxy warriors against the United States and the United Kingdom, and also what they view as world Jewry, primarily concentrated now in Israel. Consider the following. In For the Record program number 384, we dealt with a documentary film that was produced by Eric Nadler and John Friedman. That's called Stealing the Fire, and it's about the German role in equipping Saddam Hussein with some of his weapons of mass destruction, in this case specifically nuclear technology. We discussed the role of a Degussa subsidiary, Nukem, in arming Saddam Hussein with his nuclear capability, and For the Record 294, among other programs. Degussa is a subsidiary of the firm E.ON. It used to be very closely associated with IG Farben. It manufactured the Zyklon B that was used in the gas chambers in World War II, and more recently has produced one of the silicates, so to speak, that could be used to develop chemical weapons for Iraq that would be capable of overcoming U.S. CBW suits that would be used to protect U.S. troops. The Aerosil silicate also may have been used for the development of the anthrax weapons in the United States. That has not been conclusively proved yet. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience, and this comes from I Spy magazine, issue number 13 of 2002. This is a magazine that's oriented toward people, toward the intelligence community and or people who follow the dealings with the intelligence community. This, again, comes from I Spy's issue of I Spy issue 13 of 2002. And this article is about Stealing the Fire, the documentary that I just alluded to. And specifically, we're going to take a look at the very direct connections between the people involved operating on behalf of Degussa, who gave Saddam Hussein some of his nuclear capability, and people involved with Degussa in developing the Third Reich's nuclear capability as well. Key names here, Karlheinz Schaub, and the man who was his mentor, Dr. Gernot Zippe, Z-I-P-P-E. This documentary, or this article about this documentary, they are identically titled, is called Stealing the Fire. This is subtitled Investigative Reporters Uncover Germany's Nuclear Deal with Iraq. It reads in part as follows. Stealing the Fire is an investigative film that provides staggering evidence showing how a German scientist, Karlheinz Schaub, who helped develop the centrifuges necessary to extract weapons-grade uranium-235, sold classified documents in the early 1990s to Iraq. Skipping down. The investigation that launched this film started many, many years ago. In 1992, Eric Nadler, an investigative journalist, began researching material on the underground trafficking of nuclear weapons. 10 years later, he and co-producer John S. Friedman, the founder of the Documentary Center at Columbia University, have released their findings. Nadler told Paperclips magazine, quote, I was working for Frontline on PBS, And I was doing a story about the BCCI scandal, which was a crooked bank based in Pakistan. I would also note that the BCCI scandal has very many profound connections running in the direction not only of people involved in the Bush administration, but also people involved in the Saudi financial backing for Al-Qaeda. Continuing. I was doing a story called The Arming of Saudi Arabia about the hidden history of the United States and Saudi relations. I get very disturbed about this hidden history, especially about nuclear stories that weren't being covered. And I produced for Frontline something that aired in 1992 in which our team got classified CIA and DIA documents which said the following, quote, "We know that Saudi Arabia has given $5 billion to Saddam Hussein's nuclear program for the express purpose of building a nuclear bomb. My investigative team at Frontline got the banks, we got the dates, we got the money transfers, and we put this on American television. We showed that America's biggest ally in the Gulf had given $5 billion to the Hitler of the Gulf to build nuclear weapons. And though USA Today put it on their television page, it caused barely a ripple in the popular culture. I was interested in secret nuclear stories from that moment on." By the way, I would note that the Bush administration and Saddam Hussein and Saudi Arabia have a common heritage with what I call the Underground Reich, as does the Al-Taqwa milieu as well. More about Al-Taqwa later in the program. Continuing. Little did Nadler realize that he would uncover some disturbing information about the shadowy world of nuclear secrets. He was fascinated by Iraq's determined efforts to create nuclear weapons. By examining the investigation of the United Nations weapons inspectors, he came across a mysterious man, unquote. Karl-Heinz Schaub, S-C-H-A-A-B. Nadler and Friedman thought that by researching Schaub, they would open other doors and reveal the companies behind the covert nuclear trading deals, unquote. Schaub was a student of Dr. Gernot Zippe, Z-I-P-P-E, an Austrian physicist often referred to as the father of the centrifuge. And stealing the fire is as much about the centrifuge as the dirty deals done to get the technology to Iraq. Nadler says the equipment originated in the research laboratories of wartime Germany. Hence the information supplied by Schaub in 1989 to the Iraqis basically originated from the failed Nazi atomic bomb program. And again, in Miscellaneous Archive Show M8 and in For the Record Program 294, I talked about Nukem or Nukem. That is the Degussa subsidiary that was working on nuclear weapons for Hitler. And it also was a subsidiary of the Degussa firm, part of the IG Farben complex, and involved with making the poison gas for the gas chambers. The person who was basically one of the key people for Nukem and the Third Reich's nuclear development program, Dr. Gernot Zippe, and his protege, Karl-Heinz Schaub, was the guy who was basically involved with stealing the fire, getting this nuclear technology to Saddam Hussein. Skipping down, the nuclear scientist worked at the University of Virginia for a while and debriefed the Pentagon on the Russian centrifuge. However, he got homesick and soon returned to Germany and found work at Degussa. Degussa is a German multinational firm, and prior to World War II, it produced chemicals. When war broke out, it absorbed other companies, including Jewish firms. The same subsidiary also manufactured Zyklon B for use at the gas chamber at Auschwitz. Degussa refused to comment on the documentary. And after discussing Karl-Heinz Schaub and his work here, Schaub's name was actually found on documents recovered by UN weapons inspectors in Iraq. He had been selling the centrifuge secrets to Baghdad. I Spy asked Nadler just what exactly the Iraqis received for their money. Software, not hardware, unquote, he said. He then confirmed that with this data, Iraq could easily build a factory, a production line for nuclear bombs. The investigators tracked Schaub to Brazil, where he temporarily fled to avoid prosecution. Here also was the location of further obscure deals with high-ranking officials of the Brazilian armed forces. Skipping down. The documentary recently featured at the Vancouver Film Festival to sold-out shows. Here, it was named the best documentary feature, unquote, by the National Film Board of Canada. Interviews with the authors are plentiful and by all sections of society. In a broad New York accent, Nadler told I Spy that the centrifuge program could easily be hidden from the weapons inspectors and roving spy satellites. Quote, the project could be underground quite easily, unquote. Living just a few hundred yards from the destroyed World Trade Center, Nadler believed that Saddam was anything from 6 months to 5 years away from having the bomb. And skipping down, on the German government's light sentence for Schaub, and the suggestion other people might be involved, Nadler was diplomatic. Quote, Schaub had a story, and he stuck to it. He said that two other men who are now dead were involved, but it's quite clear that all this activity had to be monitored and known by the Germans. We can safely say that the case was woefully under-investigated, and as one person says in our film, the German government just wanted it to go away. Unquote. And again, the discussion here is of charges made by Nadler that it was software and not hardware that was given to Saddam Hussein. And obviously that is not necessarily something that would be visible in a physical presence. By the way, in a sidebar to this article, there's discussion of the identity of the head of the Precious Metals Division at Degussa in the post-war years. This is Dr. Alfred Beecher, and he's described here, Dr. Alfred Beecher, or Beecher, I'm not sure how it would be pronounced, B-O-E-T-T-C-H-E-R, again, B-O-E-T-T-C-H-E-R. Dr. Alfred Beecher was an SS scientific officer who headed the Precious Metals Division at Degussa in the post-war years. He later became nuclear export attaché for the West German government. So the guy heading up the Precious Metals Division at Degussa, a former SS scientific officer, later becoming a nuclear export attaché for the West German government. In addition to Beecher, one of the people who was working under him in the post-war years was Dr. Gernot Zippe, who was one of the principal people in developing nuclear weapons, or attempting to, for Hitler and the Third Reich, and the person who communicated this centrifuge technology, software, not hardware, according to the allegation made here, was Karl-Heinz Schaub, a protege of Gernot Zippe. So the Third Reich heritage to Saddam Hussein's nuclear technology, something we spoke about in 155, For the Record 155, and in For the Record program number 380, among other programs, that's Third Reich heritage to the Iraqi nuclear technology is a very direct one indeed. Another interesting article, and this appeared on the website of Deutsche Welle, in their English language world Deutsche Welle site. That is maintained by an official German broadcasting company. And there is a report of an article that was carried in the Berlin paper Tageszeitung, and this characterized the recent and largely suppressed report about Iraqi weapons development as characterizing the bulk of the firms that were involved in this as German. There were also, as I've noted in many, many programs, many American firms involved. The principal American figure involved in the arming of Saddam Hussein was none other than George Herbert Walker Bush, the man in whose name Prince Al-Walid has helped to fund a scholarship program at Phillips Andover University. But the principal, at least according to the account carried by the Tageszeitung, of the principal bulk of the firms that were used to arm Saddam Hussein with the weapons of mass destruction, those were German, and apparently the German government played a significant role in helping to develop these weapons programs for Saddam Hussein and for the resulting commerce. This again from the Deutsche Welle English language world site. This specifically is from December 17th of 2002, and Deutsche Welle headlined this, Iraqi report could prove damaging to Germany. By the way, the full URL will be noted in the description for the record 395. This posting reads in part as follows, Iraq's declarations of its weapons program contains explosive news for Germany, a Berlin paper has reported. The dossier is said to detail covert arms deals between German defense firms and Iraq. Just as the heated debates within the German government over the role of German troops and equipment in a possible war against Iraq seem to be cooling down, another potential bombshell threatens to reignite the fires. On Tuesday, the Berlin-based left-wing paper Tageszeitung reported that aspects of the 12,000-page Iraqi report on Iraq's weapons program submitted to the UN last week could prove highly embarrassing for Germany. The newspaper, believed to be the first to have access to the top-secret dossier, has written that the Iraqi declaration contains the names of 80 German firms, research laboratories, and people who are said to have helped Iraq develop its weapons program. The most contentious piece of news for Germany is that the report names it as the number one supplier of weapons to Iraq. German firms are supposed to easily outnumber the firms from other countries who have been exporting to Iraq as well. They have delivered technical know-how, components, basic substances, and even entire technical facilities for the development of atomic, chemical, and biological weapons of mass destruction to Iraq right since 1975. In some cases, conventional military and technical dealings between Germany and Iraq are said to date till 2001, 10 years after the Second Gulf War, and a time when international sanctions against Saddam Hussein are still in place. The paper reports that the dossier contains several indications of cases where German authorities, right up to the finance ministry, tolerated the illegal arms cooperation and also promoted it to a certain extent. Skipping down, after talking about various dual-use technologies which could be used for civilian or military purposes, the article goes on. German arms companies, in the meantime, have been conducting booming business with Iraq in recent years. According to the German Federal Statistics Office, German military exports to Iraq have been rising steadily from year to year. From annual exports amounting to 21.7 million euros in 1997, the volume of exports for the following year shot to some 76.4 million euros. The trend continued in 2001, with exports to Iraq bringing German firms' profits in the range of 336.5 million euros. German goods worth 226.2 million euros have already been shipped to Iraq in the first half of this year. Some of the official heavyweights in the export scene are the German electronics firm Siemens, with medical equipment and energy distribution systems, and car maker Daimler Chrysler. Both are reported to rake in revenues worth double-digit figures in the millions, skipping down. Another real fear is that Schroeder's image as a staunch pacifist might now be sullied if it emerges that Germany has all along been helping the very leader who it has been unwilling to topple to stockpile his weapons. The report could also provide the U.S. with an excuse to step up the pressure on Germany to give in to American military demands for deployment of German troops and use of German military equipment in the case of an attack on Iraq. One of the things that's worth noting in this regard, and as I've discussed in numerous programs in the past, and that is the fact that there are long-standing connections between the Third Reich and the Underground Reich, and not only Arab, but other Middle Eastern and Muslim populations. This for the control of what I have termed what the Nazi geopoliticians, I should say, have termed the Earth Island, and that's a discussion we've accessed in the past. Echoes of those links, and those links are to be found in the political background of Saddam Hussein, as well as with the German and Underground Reich dealings with him, an echo of these German/Muslim/Arab connections, going back to the post-World War I period and to the geopolitics envisioned by Karl Haushofer. We read the following. This from the San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, January 16th of 2002. This is an article by Eric Geiger of the Chronicle Foreign Service, headlined, Germany Bans Islamic Group, subtitled Organization Accused of Anti-Semitic and Anti-Israel Propaganda. This is by Eric Geiger of the Chronicle Foreign Service. Dateline Munich reads in part, Germany's top law enforcement official on Wednesday outlawed an Islamic group accused of establishing contacts with neo-Nazis and spreading propaganda calling for the destruction of Israel and the killing of Jews. Founded in 1952, Hizb ut-Tahrir has said its goal to restore the Islamic way of life in the Muslim world and create a single Islamic caliphate from the western coast of Africa to China. It is believed to be based in Britain, but no one knows for sure. Note that this was founded in 1952. Skipping down. In recent media reports, German intelligence officials have been described as being stunned that widened surveillance showed high-ranking Muslim leaders in Germany making contact with terror suspects. Their identities are being zealously guarded, but reportedly include leaders of a nationwide Turkish immigrant organization and representatives of the Muslim Brotherhood, the most powerful opposition group in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood has documented connections not only to the Third Reich, but also to the Al-Taqwa Milya and through the people targeted in the March 20th, 2002 Operation Green Quest raids, to the Republican Party, its ethnic outreach organization, and to the administration of George W. Bush. Now, in that article, it's not discussed the neo-Nazi connections to this Islamic fundamentalist organization are not discussed in any detail. Those are developed, however, in an article about this carried in the Orlando Sun-Sentinel. This was posted on January 15th of 2002. It's headlined, Germany bans Islamic group it says is anti-Semitic. And skipping down, Hizb ut-Tahrir became well known in Germany after staging a rally at Berlin's Technical University in October, at which the main speaker made anti-American comments. Sheely said, members of Germany's extreme right-wing NPD, a party the government is trying to ban, also attended the rally, he said. The NPD, by the way, has frequently used both Horst Mahler and Ahmed Huber as speakers. That both Huber and Mahler have close affiliations with the NPD. Huber is a director of Al-Taqwa that's had its assets confiscated for being an Al-Qaeda link, and Horst Mahler was discussed at considerable length in For the Record 331, number 333, and in For the Record 383, among other programs. So again, with regard to both the Muslim Brotherhood and Islamo-fascist and secular Arabo-fascist regimes, one wants to look at the deep politics involved in these, and one examines, for example, as seemingly disparate elements as Saudi Arabia, Al-Taqwa, the Muslim Brotherhood, Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and last but certainly not least, the Bush administration, as well as Germany. One finds deep political links going back to not only the Third Reich, but the Underground Reich as well. And many of the relationships between the Underground Reich and various powerful interests were developed as Cold War deep politics or parapolitics, but they've now become deep politics. Again, considering the concept of proxy war, in For the Record program number 394, I discussed the Battle of Menwith Hill and the EU/German pressure on the Menwith Hill/Echelon facility. I described that, as I will again, as an act of war. And in discussing the September 11th attacks, I'm going to reread a section of a description for the Record 119. This is on the Spitfire website. For the Record 119 was recorded in December of 1998, but it in turn accesses a segment of For the Record program 103 that was recorded in August of 1998. August of 1998 was a very key month. In the wake of the Cold War, the lines of political struggle are being redrawn, with potential conflict between the United States and Germany, and beyond that, the German-dominated European Union, threatening to replace the confrontation between the U.S. and former USSR. In the field of intelligence, the U.S.-German conflict is already beginning to manifest itself. This broadcast sets forth some of the most important and recent developments in the friction between German and American intelligence. After a brief discussion of Germany's expulsion of an American diplomat who allegedly worked for the CIA, the broadcast reprises a section of FTR 103 from August of 1998 and available from Spitfire. This section of the program sets forth friction between German intelligence chief Bernd Schmittbauer and the FBI over industrial spying, as well as a consequently important story about attempts by the European Union, read Germany, to compromise the National Security Agency's vital Menwith Hill electronic listening post in England. Mr. Emery has characterized that pressure on the NSA facility as an act of war and believes it to be, in the information age, as strategically significant as the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor in World War II. And indeed, I think that the month of August of 1998 is critically important in a number of respects. The New York Times of Saturday, January 18th of 1993, carried an article about German intelligence surveillance of the Hamburg cell. It was implicated in the September 11th attacks, and that was extensive indeed. 3 years before the September 11th attacks, Germany's domestic intelligence service was tracking prominent members of the Hamburg terrorist cell that planned and executed the aircraft hijackings, according to newly obtained documents. The documents, including intelligence reports, surveillance logs, and transcripts of intercepted telephone calls, appear to contradict public claims by the German authorities that they knew little about the members of the Hamburg cell before the attacks. As early as 1998, the records show, the Germans monitored a meeting between men suspected of plotting the attacks. The surveillance would lead a year later to the Hamburg apartment where Mohammed Atta and other main plotters were living while attending universities. And skipping down further, this of surveillance of Munir Motesadegh. Mr. Motesadegh admitted that he knew Mr. Atta and other plotters and had attended Qaeda training camps in Afghanistan. He has maintained in trial testimony that he did not know that his friends were planning to attack the United States. No evidence has been presented at his three-month trial that would reveal when the police first opened an inquiry into Mr. Motesadegh, but the intelligence agency documents show that by August of 1998 he was under surveillance and that the trail soon led to most of the main participants in the later attacks. Now, in August of 1998 was when I first discussed the EU German attack on Menwith Hill, placing it in the same context as the attack on Pearl Harbor. August of 1998 was when Saddam Hussein stopped, or it was when, excuse me, August of 1998 was when Osama bin Laden stopped using his satellite telephone for communications because of the possibility that the NSA might intercept that. It was that same month that the embassies were bombed in Africa and that Bill Clinton retaliated with cruise missile attacks against Saddam Hussein. It was also that same month that Bill Clinton was facing impeachment and that Saddam Hussein began to toughen his dealings with UN weapons negotiators. The question I'm asking, in the proxy war that I believe the Underground Reich is waging against the United States and Britain, was the German/EU attack on Menwith Hill that I began documenting and characterizing in the same terms as the attack on Pearl Harbor, that in August of 98, was that in any way related to the opening of the surveillance on the September 11th cell in Hamburg in August of 1998? And what connection would that have, if any, to Osama bin Laden's ceasing to use his satellite phone? Again, bear in mind, as we looked at in For the Record 331, in the wake of the attacks, the Germans have gone to great lengths to try to deflect attention away from their own intelligence shortcomings, and they specifically charged that the Echelon network had given the U.S. and Britain forewarnings of the attacks, and this despite the fact that they had opened surveillance on the conspirators is by August of 1998. That's when they began attacking the Menwith Hill facility. That's when Osama bin Laden stopped using his satellite telephone for communications, lest they be intercepted by the NSA. So again, what relationship between the German-EU attack on Menwith Hill, which opened around August of 98, the surveillance of the Hamburg cell that was used on September 11th, and Osama bin Laden's cessation of the use of satellite telephones to communicate with his superiors? I suspect that those events are all connected to and part of what I call the Battle of Menwith Hill. That concludes Side 2 of For the Record Program number 395, Tangled Webs, Parapolitics, Deep Politics, and Proxy War in the Middle East. This is being recorded on January 19th of 2003. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.